The regular meeting of the February 18th, regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission will now come to order. We will pause for the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand.
A Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Thank you. Please be seated. For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, for which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation and there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each agenda item on regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will then be followed by a presentation from the petitioner should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a speaker card. If you're participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on the screen. Do not use the feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you will be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be less than or equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, for those participating online, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item if you want to speak on a petition. Once the floor is closed for public comment, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you are not certain you want to speak, still use the raise your hand feature, or if in person, fill out the speaker card. You will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then address any needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. All right, our first order of business is approval of the agenda.
Call this motion to approve the agenda.
Why would he second?
All right, all in favor, voice vote?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. We had a personnel committee meeting today. There were no decisions made at that personnel committee meeting. Items requested to be removed from the final agenda. A variance to the general development plan for 925 and 1303 East President Street. Is there anybody here who was interested in that item? All right. Motion?
Are we doing the consent agenda as a whole?
Oh, we're doing the items requested to be removed from the final agenda.
Sorry. Cole's motion to remove item 2 from the final agenda.
Why would he second?
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. There are no items requested to be withdrawn. There are several items on the consent agenda. I'm going to read them all, and if you were here for one of these items, please let me know at the end. Approval of the January 28th, 2025 meeting minutes. Major subdivision Hopeton Plantation Tract 7, Phase 1A. And major subdivision Hopeton Plantation Tract 7, Phase 1B. And finally, a ratification of a resolution for the executive director, CEO, to execute a coastal incentive grant with the Georgia Department of Coastal Resources Division. Is there anyone here who wanted to speak on any of those items? All right.
Cole's motion to approve consent agenda.
Why would he second?
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. We have no old business. Our first regular business item is special use 116 and 0 Arnold Street 25000377-ZA.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the board. Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services and Current Planning here. Our first request today, so sorry, I want to do something before I forget. And I'm going to email a document after I get done. It's for the third petition. Would you come and put it on the podium? Not right now. When I get done. I'm sorry. Okay. All right. So our first request is at 116 and 0 Arnold Street. This is a special use request to extend an existing emergency shelter use that its staff's understanding has been in place since about 1983. To look at the subject parcels, we can see that the future land use is indicated as downtown commercial. That purple next to downtown expansion, downtown commercial. These are the future land use designations. So it is downtown commercial presently. The purple that you see is downtown expansion. So very similar in terms of their situation for future land use. The zoning map also zoned downtown commercial. This is a street view image from the existing inner city night shelter. This is their existing facility. And these are the parcels that are located just north that they are interested in acquiring for the purpose of expanding this existing use. Just to offer you a view here, the parcels that are just behind these parcels have been removed. The existing structure that was dilapidated has been removed. And so there is nothing to the rear and nothing just to the north of it. There is a church, however, that is close by. And so in looking at the review criteria, the ordinance requests us to consider whether the special use is consistent with the intent and goals. Staff found that this request was consistent with the Plan 2040 housing goal of increasing supportive housing for special needs populations, such as individuals who are homeless, mentally ill, disabled, and residents in drug recovery. The limited use criteria that are associated with emergency shelters are those that would be considered at the time that this goes through its permitting process with the City of Savannah. And so with that, MPC staff does recommend approval, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here?
Yes.
Would you like to speak?
Yes, please.
Come up to the microphone and state your name for the record, please.
My name is Yvonne Pryor. I'm the executive director of Inner City Night Shelter. We're seeking a special use permit for the purpose of expanding the shelter. We have been doing a very good work since 1983, but we're somewhat limited in what we can provide, the services that we can provide because of space. COVID changed a lot of things. So now we're just every inch in the building is being utilized for emergency shelter. So we haven't been able to offer any additional services that we would like to offer. We could use some, space for classrooms, for, drug counseling, mental health counseling, and of course, doing all of that, referring it out to other agencies that would be able to come into our facility to perform those services. I have with me here today, I have Mr. Brian Felder, Felder and Associates, who's our architect. I have with me also Ms. Stephanie Flowers, who is the church that is directly behind us. Their congregation is in agreement with us, as well as Jennifer DeLong, that is the executive director of the Homeless Authority, which is our lead agency that deals with homelessness in the city of Savannah. So if we're going to impact homelessness in our city, inner city is going to have to be a part of it. The last homeless count that Mr. DeLong sent me was between 500 and 600 individuals that were either sheltered or unsheltered. So it was between 500 and 600. Well, inner city served 494 of them. And that's with the limited space that we have. So we would be able to make a big difference in homelessness in this city. And I know you all see it. I know everybody in this room sees it. Us being able to acquire that property would give us better control of what happens around the facility. It's a tough situation right now around the facility because people come because they want to eat. Well, one thing that's going to change in this is that we cannot serve people that don't reside there. We can't give them a meal, so we won't see the trays outside. So that will come into play. But if Brian wants to add to us as the type of structure that we're looking to do, it's not SRO, it's emergency shelter that we're adding so that we can do beds and then just add more space that we can do educational training, job training, that kind of thing. So Brian, if you wish.
Hello, my name is Brian Felder. I don't really have anything to add because that was just about perfect. I would say that as soon as this property was made available to Ms. Pryor, she immediately called her architect to say, hey, let's draw something. And my recommendation was to come and establish or make sure that the use would be permitted. These are DC lots, 100% lot coverage is permitted. We'll have to work through parking requirements with NPC, which we'll do. And we have at least one historic structure to consider retaining. But I can answer generalized questions, but that's really the statement. We're looking for approval for expansion of the use, and then we'll move forward. Any questions for me?
Thank you. Are there questions for the applicant or for staff?
If you would hear from Ms. DeLong, please. Jennifer DeLong, Executive Director of the Homeless Authority.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity. I'll be very fast.
Your name, please.
Jen DeLong, Executive Director of Chatham Savannah Authority for the Homeless, and I've been a partner with Ms. Yvonne Pryor since day one in the job. And the point of this expanding Inner City Night Shelter is because Inner City Night Shelter is the only shelter in our community that's considered a low barrier shelter, meaning that a person can be in active substance use disorder and they can get an emergency bed if Ms. Yvonne Pryor has a bed available at Inner City Night Shelter. It is a critical need that is unfulfilled in our community right now. We have excellent homeless shelters in our community. They're all congregant shelter bed spaces. But what we are really in need of and where there is a deficit is the ability for someone to go into a shelter that's considered low barrier. Ms. Yvonne Pryor and her team are willing to take people in that have substance use disorder, severe mental illness, and people just coming back into our community from Department of Corrections. And hers is the only facility that has that capability right now. So expanding capacity there is really critical to help meet the needs in our community. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Yes. For me or for,
yeah, for you. Yeah. Okay. The type of people in this, do you have registered sex offenders? Do you screen? Do you have violent criminals? What sort of screening process?
We have everybody. And as far as the sex offenders that are there, we have a very strong relationship with probation and parole, which is Department of Community Supervision. Any sex offender that is there must be on active probation, which means that the probation officer can come at any time. If it's 3-4 o'clock in the morning, we have an understanding with them that they can come to make sure that those persons are in the facility. People that have parole, just basic probation officers, have the ability to come. There are plenty of people that are on probation that may not be sex offenders. But I mean, they just report to their probation officer as instructed. The thing about sex offenders is that our policy says that they must have committed the crime in Chatham County and they must be on active probation. That way we don't open a floodgate of sex offenders coming from across the state because we get calls every day. And that's the way that we screen them as far as getting in or coming into Chatham County. Did the person, plenty of moms call. My son's going to be released. Well, is your son a sex offender? Yes. Well, did he commit the crime in Chatham County? No, he did not. Well, I'm sorry, ma'am. We can't serve him. So that's pretty much how we screen them as far as coming in. But our relationship with Department of Community Supervisions is really what's key for us. And that's mandatory because I don't want to babysit them. So
thank you. How many beds or people can you accommodate at one time now? And how many will you be able to accommodate after the proposed expansion?
Right now we do 68. And that is male, adult male and female. I would imagine, we're going to do what Ryan and I talked about it the other day. We're going to do like smaller dorm areas that we're thinking maybe 6 people to a dorm. And then the full dorm is like 2 bathrooms. I think we talked about. And, so is how many that we can do based on the square footage and based on what the requirements are is how high we can go. with it. I know the first floor is probably going to be classrooms and that sort. So it's just going to be based on what the guidelines for construction is. That's Brian's side of the house. But
so are you proposing to basically tear down everything that's there and build a new facility?
No. We're going to keep what we have there. The building that is being expanded, the area that the building is being expanded to, we're just going to tie on to where we are. We need all of the space that we can get. Our offices are now, of course, at 124 Arnold Street. The area that is being used for a dorm houses 28 men. Well, that will probably go back. It used to be a dining room pre-COVID. That will probably go back to a dining room so that they'll have a place to sit down and eat because there won't be a dining space in each individual six-man dorm. So we just, it's our intent is just to tie on and make it all uniform, you know, from the outside so that it all looks the same. Keep it as much historic as we can possibly keep it. keeping it historic and just kind of go that route with it.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. You say they're not all sex offenders. What other kind of offenders are in there?
Smokers, drinkers.
Offenders to community. What kind of other offenders?
I mean, people that have come out of jail. I mean, there's anybody that may be on probation. The biggest issue for there is the sex offender. That's what keeps probation, you know, on my speed dial.
My concern is the apartments around the area, which have beautified the area, but the SCAD students.
Well, they're there now.
I know that.
Yes.
And I'm just to expand this with more people like this. I'm concerned about the students. I'm concerned about the safety of the area.
Well,
you know, as we're trying to change that area, have y'all looked at other sites to build a new facility?
Sure. Sure we have. I've probably been before you all a couple of times. I've been trying since I've been the executive director since 2013 to address inner city having some place to go. We went from Tybee Depot. We went to the place where the tiny houses are. That's been my drive is to find some place for inner city to go. Not in my backyard is what happens when you have sex offenders in your building.
I'm not trying to go there, somebody's backyard.
Yeah.
Put anything like this in a neighborhood that's not unwanted. Nobody wants that.
Of course not.
Okay.
Of course not.
But the fact, I just wondered if there's another alternative to what Savannah's doing in that area with all the new expansion of apartments and trying to change that area. The old building in itself, the existing building, is pretty run down as it is.
Apparently you haven't seen it. The city of Savannah just invested $500,000 into that building.
Well, I hope they got their money's worth.
Well, I'm sure they did.
Okay.
May I ask you a question?
Sure.
So you're saying that homeless people are second class and they can't live in that area?
You know, you're not going to put words in my mouth.
I didn't say that.
I didn't say the second class. I know homeless people.
Okay.
I worked after homeless people. But I also understand the city of Savannah, where we're trying to go in that area. And my concern is the safety of the students, ma'am. That's my concern, okay? And this, you know, I don't know your hours of operation. There's plenty of times I've gone and dropped clothes off at the porch there at night at midnight.
Was that you?
Huh? That might be. I'm sure there's others. But, you know, I have a heart for what's happening in our society. I just wanted to make sure that there's other alternatives and have we looked at them. You know,
yes, sir.
Instead
yes,
of expanding
sir. For many
what's
years.
Existing.
For many years. The new building that's there, the helmsman, Ms. Kim, who is the manager there now, she and I have had a conversation just yesterday, as a matter of fact. The concern for the students there are just as much mine as it is for you and for her. I actually called Ms. Kim on yesterday because there's a young woman there that has had an issue with drugs. And apparently has made friends with somebody that does not reside in the shelter, but comes around that area. I called Ms. Kim and asked her, you need to go downstairs and speak to that young lady because she doesn't need to be hanging out with these people. Mm-hmm. So I understand exactly where you're coming from. And her response to me was, Ms. Savannah, I'm going to go down there and speak to her right now. So I understand what you're saying. But in the time that building has been constructed, we have not had any problems. For me not to sound terrible or anything, but I don't take a whole bunch of foolishness from the homeless people. It's an adult shelter, so I expect them to act like adults. And if you met with any of them that reside at Inner City Night Shelter, that reputation is, you know, you're not going to just do anything around here and think you're going to get away with. If you're right, I got your back. If you're wrong, I'm throwing my hands up and the folks coming to get you. So that's pretty much how we run inner city. I think, our relationship with, Chatham County, with City of Savannah Police, Department of Community Supervision, very strong relationship with all of them.
Is there a set policy on hours that y'all lock the door?
7 p.m.
7 p.m.?
7 p.m.
Okay. And that'll still be the situation with the expansion?
Yes. 7 p.m.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Wilson?
Hi. How long did you say that y'all have been at that location?
1983. 83. Yes, ma'am.
And I'm not familiar with the apartment building. How long has the apartment building been?
It's been complete maybe a year and a half, maybe 14 months, but it's just this past summer.
Okay, so it's relatively new.
Very new.
Okay, and so y'all been there since the 80s, and so an apartment building came in your area knowing that y'all are an established night mm-hmm. shelter there.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, ma'am.
Yes, thank you for your time.
Any discussion? Oh, I do have Ms. Flowers. Did you want to speak? I have a card from you. Please state your name for the record.
Hi. I have a hearing issue, so I'm going to need you to speak loud for me, please.
Please state your name for the record.
Okay. Stephanie Flowers.
Go ahead.
I don't really have any questions. I just really was concerned about what was going to be built or trying to revive that area. So that I came in to look and just to see exactly what was being done. We don't oppose anything that they're trying to do because it sounds like something that needs to be done. So we're in agreement with that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Discussion?
Quick question for the staff. So in acquiring this is two separate parcels, correct?
Yes, sir.
And it will eventually have to be combined in order to do the necessary expansion, correct?
Well, because it's going to be developed as a singular structure, most likely, yes. But as the petitioner stated, 100% lot coverage is permitted here. But yes, functionally, it makes sense to combine them.
Okay.
All of them into one.
Just wanted to confirm. So,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Ready for the motion?
Cole's motion to approve the staff's recommendation.
Why would he second?
All right. I have a motion and a second on the floor. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
No.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
No.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. Motion passes. All right. Our next agenda item is variance to a general development plan at 2815 William Street, 25000487-CA.
My apologies, Madam Chair. Bear with me one second. I just want to get all the items clear that we discussed during the pre-meeting. So the parking deck plans are there. Okay. Very cool. All right. So our second petition today is a request at 2815 William Street. And this is essentially a request for a parking reduction of one off-street parking space. The subject parcel is located on William Street. It's just across from another parcel that this board rezoned for the development of some townhouses not too long ago. It's right next to Daffin Park. And so you can see on the future land use map, the properties are currently indicated for commercial suburban for future land use, and they're zoned TC. Sorry, this is extremely small. Commercial. Here we go. They are zoned BC, community business. All right. So this is subject parcel. You can see it's 103 by 113. And it is currently developed. It looked like it was a contractor warehouse of some sort. The petitioner is seeking to establish an indoor animal services business known as Midtown Mutts. And in doing so, they have an off-street parking requirement of 10 spaces that is based on a square footage of just over 2,000 square feet. In redeveloping this site, it is able to accommodate 9 conforming spaces, including 1 ADA space. You can see here the ordinance requires 1 space per 250 for this particular use. And this is the proposed configuration. This is a site plan that staff has received that is pending this variance request, the outcome of the variance request. And so you can see here there are 9 spaces provided, which leaves 1 space unaccounted for. In looking at the variance criteria, staff chose to look specifically at, say, literal interpretation. In the interpretation, the literal interpretation of the provisions would not deny the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed, though it's evident that the ordinance favors preservation of existing structures by its award of parking credit for legal nonconforming structures. The request is not purely financially motivated and represents a modest allowance to permit the reuse of an existing structure. And on that basis, staff does recommend approval of the request. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks. Is the petitioner here? Would you like to come up and share, or your choice? All right, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Chair? Any discussion? Motion?
Call's motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Why would he second?
All right, I have a motion and a second on the floor.
Ms. Eggett?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Ms. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. Motion passes. All right. And our third item on the agenda is a variance to the general development plan for 1001/1015 Whitaker Street and 120/124 West Park Avenue. 25000446-CA.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Edward Morrow again. The request before you, I would describe this as part 2 of 3 for this particular project. You recently saw this for a request to rezone the subject parcels, and today the petitioner is requesting a variance for development plans specifically related to the number of floors permitted.
Could we cut the volume up? Somebody's having difficulty hearing. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Today, specifically, the petitioner is requesting a variance to the number of floors permitted and the building heights. And so this is a good sort of orientation to our subject parcels, the 4 parcels that are part of this request and the future development. If you were to walk through Forsyth Park and look to your left at this point, this is what you would see today. And ultimately, the petitioner is requesting to change that view to look something like this. These are some renderings that staff was provided through the course of this petition. Right. And so the request specifically along Whitaker Street, Building 1, the petitioner is requesting to build a structure that's 4 stories high with a maximum height up to 57 feet. Building 2 at the corner of Whitaker and Park is requested to have 5 stories and a height of 71 feet. And Building 3, which is at the intersection of Park and Barnard, is requested to have 4 stories up to 57 feet. I will just make note again, I know that many of you are aware that This particular configuration includes a special exception to permit a building that is in excess of 10,000 square feet in area in its footprint. And I'll just note, though that request is not before this board, I'd just like to point out that it is in association with this parking garage entrance that you can see from Howard Street, which bisects the two sets of properties. And so that's in relation to that, but that request will be heard by the Historic Preservation Commission. I'd also just like to add a couple of disclaimers here. First, that new construction is going to require issuance of a certificate of appropriateness from the Historic Preservation Commission, even once it leaves this board. And so what will happen today is that the Planning Commission will establish an envelope, if you will, a maximum. And this petition will go on to the Historic Preservation Commission to review the project in light of its factors. It will also hear the special exception request. And finally, issuance of site development permits will require review of all city site plan reviewing departments, traffic, stormwater, parking, tree, fire, just to name a few. And so just to sort of take everyone back for a brief second, I find it important to distinguish the present request from the first request that was heard. It was a request where, if you recall, there was very little conversation about the structure itself. Because the request was in regard to changing the zoning to fit the character of a changing and growing district. And so I will just harken back to the original development agreement, which was discussed at that time. March 28th, City Council entered into a development agreement for a parking garage. Per the agreement, the partnership would result in the construction of a three-level underground parking garage with 100 spaces to be made available to the public during business hours, and the remainder or the balance of parking spaces to be available to the public on weekends and after business hours. This zoning ultimately went through City Council on January 9th, and it was with the condition that in the absence of a zoning district that adequately captured the characteristics and nuance of the increasingly commercial dominant mixed-use nature of development along higher volume corridors within this district, the Planning Commission recommends approval of the request to rezone to TC2. TC2 was identified as kind of a stand-in in the absence of a zoning district that accurately reflected, how did I jump all the way to the bottom? Accurately reflected the nature of the changes that were occurring in this area. And so the permissible uses were restricted to those in the TN1 district. There we go. All right. And so I would also like to bring this to your attention once again, because the driving force behind that, it started with the September 24th petition where this board was asked to consider a text amendment for the purpose of establishing a restaurant, which felt a bit excessive. And it ultimately ended up in the rezoning of one parcel rather than the text amendment, which would have taken us perhaps a little bit closer in getting to where we need to be in considering future changes in this district. Nonetheless, the conversation about the fact that the character of development within this district is changing is not a new one. It is one that has been going on, and staff has called for changes, the adoption of a new zoning district or an overlay, specifically to account for the fact that we don't currently have a regulatory structure that supports what's happening here. The red lines on the screen representing major thoroughfares. Also, we talked about the fact that in looking back at our planning studies, where there was a published study that spoke to the fact that we had evaluated that in light of the fact that tourism and leisure was growing within our city and that redevelopment was taking place, the Parking Matters study called for the identification of new locations for parking assets, for identification of points of interest and the creation of mobility options for people to get around our city more easily. So this is a broader conversation again about a changing character of development. I'll throw this out there again. This is a visual from on the left-hand side of your screen, a visual from the Parking Matters study, which identifies potential circulator routes that could be expanded in order to account these new changing points of interest. And again, I will show you the STVR map, which I will say is from 2022, but it likely has not changed very much, so that we can see that this area indeed is changing. These are short-term vacation rentals that were registered at that time. Also, just again, because we are talking about a specific site, I'd like to point out that many of these STVRs are located in very close proximity of the subject parcels, and each of these things has an effect on the changing character of this district. So again, that was the rezoning. Today we are here to talk about the structure that's on top. And so I'll turn your attention again to this development agreement, this time in a little bit more detail, just to point out again, as this came to MPC, we looked to this as an indicator of the intent behind this project. It is evidence of a public-private partnership between Forsyth Commons, CETA, and the City of Savannah. And it states, as you can see in red there, the city desires to create public parking. It was also to get an underground parking garage and public restrooms within Forsyth Park. Upon completion of the parking garage and office building, CETA would lease these parking garage and buildings to Forsyth. And ultimately, the charge was to construct a structure that would be a gateway entrance to the city's historic district. This is the development agreement that went through City Council in March of 2024. And so as a point of departure, since today's conversation is about monumentality, I know that the room is full of tons of opinions about what it is that this means. So just a thought, monuments are human landmarks which men have created as symbols for their ideals, for their aims, and for their actions. They're intended to outlive the period which originated them and constitute a heritage for future generations. As such, they form a link between the past and the future. And so I'd like to thank Caitlin and our historic staff for their always inspired conversations that helped us to get to the point that we're at today. Again, this did come from much thought and deliberation internally so that we could understand how to reconcile this building that came to us as a product of this agreement. How do we reconcile its characteristics with the requirements of our zoning ordinance? And so it is from that lens that I have applied these criteria. The first of which is with regard to general consistency. So the variances are consistent with the intent of the ordinance in that the proposed structures are conceived in furtherance of an identified governmental purpose, actually two of them, the first being the enhancement of parking and mobility services in proximity of Forsyth Park. And this is a course of action that was derived from a published study. The second being the creation of a structure of architectural significance that serves as a gateway to the city's historic district. The label that is applied to such structures by the ordinance is monumental, again, owing to its unique form and function. While some relief is given, these structures must still meet the visual compatibility criteria, which are not within the purview of this board, but the structures' alignment with these criteria will be considered by the Historic Preservation Commission. Purely for your edification, I've included these here. I'm including this because whenever a petitioner is requesting relief from one of our standards, there must be a justification for that. That's the purpose of going through the criteria. And so in this instance, staff has chosen to lean on the idea of the monumental building. This is a structure that has a stated purpose of being a gateway and a landmark. It is to be significant. And so I'd just like to note for the record, it's interesting that this typically is a conversation had amongst historic boards in the context of their petitions, but historic boards consider form and design, not use. So while I do understand that this definition points to specific uses, these are guides and not necessarily specific determinants of the monumentality of a given structure. Structures change use over time. And that was one of the overarching themes of the original conversation when we rezoned the subject property. Again, just to offer you a view of what it is that the HPC will consider, visual compatibility, here's the definition, positive relationship of any alterations or new construction to their context based on the application of adopted standards, including visual compatibility criteria as specified by the ordinance. And I'll just jump to these are the actual considerations under visual compatibility. So as these are being weighed out, they're looking at height, width, scale, setbacks, rhythm, openings, projections, materials, roof shapes, and signs. In looking at the second variance criteria, the special conditions, there were a few. Because of the specific charge on this particular petition, it was necessary that it be in close proximity to the park, that it have location on a key intersection, that there be no contributing historic resources to be demolished. that there be requisite land area that was able to be assembled for the purpose of making this development possible, and finally, suitability of soils. So there are a number of factors that come into play here when considering where could such a structure as that proposed within the development agreement, where could it even go? And I would say this is probably one of a few sites within proximity of the park where this is possible. In terms of literal interpretation, the literal interpretation of the regulations likely would not deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed. However, there are implications for a denial of some relief for the potential of the project to achieve a landmark or gateway status. Height and bulk alone are insufficient to imbue a structure with monumental qualities, especially one that is to remain practical, and this is an office and a parking garage, ultimately. However, it, viewed in that context, well-reasoned allowances should be permitted for these types of structures. So again, this is not absent from the general context of the fact that it is occurring within the Victorian Historic District. The Victorian and Mid-City District are undergoing significant change. The present petition is unique in that it involves the advancement of a governmental purpose. This will not be the case, however, for the vast majority of infill projects in this area. And with that understanding, as preferences and policies surrounding mobility in particular change over time, that is to say, as short as parking lots disappear and sites are redeveloped, future development is best conceived in the context of a new zoning district, overlay or small area plan that strategically identifies and captures these limited opportunities and channels them toward meaningful expansion of the historic Victorian district's character. Another thought from a text that Caitlin shared with me. It is really difficult in the present. It says in the present, it's impossible to generate a single coherent narrative for a culture or a city. There are many narratives surrounding this project. And so thus, in the fragmented present, potential monuments exist in a liminal period where the buildings are both loved and hated, their significance, monumental status, discussed, discarded, and reestablished depending on interpretation. What comes with time and history is a simplification of the historical and architectural narrative, allowing for the simple classification or declassification of buildings as monuments. And so the last thing I'll leave you with here is a view of how it is that we're considering what it is that we're going to keep and what it is that we're going to get rid of. And I'm sure that many of you, as you look at this building and you look at the design epochs that are represented by the years here, many of us can now see the wisdom or the folly in the decisions that were made. And so I know that right now there are many different opposing opinions about how this will come out, but I would just urge you to keep this this perspective in mind, that it's really only in the future that we will understand whether or not this is a good idea or a bad idea, or if this is something that we will attempt to plow down and create space for something new. So with that, staff does recommend denial as requested, but we have an alternative recommendation. Building 3 adjoining Barnard Street should be compliant with the TC2 zoning district regulations and have a maximum height of 3 stories up to 45 feet. Building 1 should have a maximum height of 4 stories up to 51 feet, and building 2 should have a maximum height of 5 stories up to 63 feet. With that, I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Is the applicant here?
Yes, ma'am.
I actually have a quick question for staff.
I'd prefer waiting until we hear from the applicant. Sorry.
Okay.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Jepson with Evans General Contractors, and agent for the for that petitioner. So there are a number of things that we frankly agree with. We've been working with this board and staff, or certainly the staff, for a long time. And so we agree with them in their recommendation. They agreed that portions of this development should be 5-4 or merit 5-4 and 3 stories. We agree that the diversity of height provides a greater architectural significant development. This height is not mandatory for this development, but it promotes the best design, and we're going to introduce our architect that is guiding that design towards the end of that to walk you through that. We agree with their recommendation to reduce building 3 to 3 stories. As submitted to you, as its application, it is requested to be 4 stories, and we agree that that one should be reduced to 3 stories. That would put that building within zoning and not requesting an ordinance or not requesting a variance. We also agree that with staff that the visual representation in the building along the residential component of Wahlberg ought to also be limited to 3 stories. And so we provided that in a setback. The only thing that we disagree on, and we'll walk you through the reasons why, is really 8 feet on the 5-story and 6 feet on the 4-story building. Those are the only real 2 variances that we're here to discuss today. I know there were lots of questions earlier. I'm happy to answer questions related to zoning and meetings and all that other stuff, but those are really the only 2 things that that we're focused on in today's petition. In terms of public meetings, there was some question. I've never been part of a project that has had more public meetings. I've personally been in 3 with the V&A board. I've been in another 4 with 3 public meetings with the V&A as a group, 4 with the board. I have other partners of mine that have had numerous other meetings with the board and with the V&A that I was not a part of. The development agreement was approved by the city in a public meeting, and it was approved at CETA in a particular public meeting. We've met with the downtown historic district for their particular input. We've met with historic Savannah for their particular input. With the V&A, there was a number of people during zoning that actually stood up here and represented that they didn't feel like they were well represented by the actual elected V&A board. We've subsequently been back and met with them as well and actually came up with a framework of what we call a good neighborhood agreement, which we have here. So in terms of public meeting, public input, public design, there has been a lot of that. Our last meeting with staff here, we actually brought in 6 options of height and massing to have a practical discussion with staff. And we let them, we listened to them, and then we started moving in a direction based upon preferences. And so that's kind of where we are today. It's not that they selected one, but they, it was an inclusive process where we got an opportunity to, get that input from everybody. It's important to understand in this design, we're very sensitive to our neighbors. Our property owners live here and own properties here. We operate our businesses here. Our employees come to work here. So this is not an instance where a bunch of outsiders are coming to develop something. That is not the case at all. 2 of our principals actually own and operate their businesses inside the Victorian Neighborhood District. On this development, we have no lost views or obstructions with this particular development. And so we've had our architects and engineers do sight lines and views and visibilities from adjacencies and neighbors. We're surrounded by 4 rights of way, and the only 2 residential properties that are within our block, right next to our office buildings, are actually properties that are owned by the petitioner or his agents. So we are not adding, we're not blocking anybody's views. We're not changing views from the park at all. The view of these buildings from the park is completely masked 100% by the existing tree canopy. We've evidenced that in one of our last presentations where we took the building that's actually higher on the same side of the street on Whitaker, that's 6 stories. We took a view as far away as we could get on the sidewalk, and you could not see the top of the building. These buildings are shorter. Our request has them shorter than those, so we're not changing the views there. There's no change in light or sun exposure that would affect trees or particular neighbors. We have achieved a strong preference for height to make this building a little bit more monumental on the corner, and that's more really the public component of the project. That would be the entry and the exit to and from the parking garage and the area where the crosswalk is along West Park. We've broken the single to reduce some of the square footage and make the buildings read architecturally better. Multiple parties, Historic Savannah and a number of others, have indicated that they didn't want to see one larger building, so we've broken that particular building up. And now that's split up into two buildings, which we think is frankly a better design. We've incorporated surface parking into the development. Originally, we had some surface parking associated with what is this kind of this gray box area, and there was a strong preference by staff planning on HPC and MPC to see that as future residential. There was a strong preference not to have green space because you're close to a park, and two, no need to have surface parking when we're right over a particular garage. With respect to height, that's really where we are, 6 feet and 8 feet. That is the request. Staff is simply looking at this through a lens related to the ordinance, and we appreciate that. Their math was based upon a floor height for the first floor and then 12 feet floors above that. And what I'm here to do is tell you why that is a challenge to do in today and what is considered really a best practice. My firm has built over 1 million square feet of office space in the Savannah market. Not one office building has ever been built with a 12-foot floor plate. LS3P has a large office practice. They have offices in about 8 different cities. They've done over 100 office buildings. Not a single office building that they have ever built has had 12-foot floor plates. The new city offices that the city of Savannah builds has floor plates that are 16 and 15 feet. The new county office that is being planned has floor plates that are 15 and 16 feet. The new city of Savannah office also has the same thing. The best, in terms of best practices, architectural guidelines, first floor height should be 16 to 18 feet. We've reduced that down to 15 to minimize it. In terms of upper floors, the minimum considered best practice is 14 feet 8 inches. We've reduced that down below that to 14 as part of our request. So we are sensitive to height, and we've been making compromises, but there are some functional things that are part of a building that make this really difficult to compress that down any lower. The first being structural steel and the size of structural steel members. We have to build modern buildings today to the current building codes. Current building codes require us to build these to about 135 mile an hour winds. That puts us, when you put together the structural steel, it gives us a joist height, where joists are the structural members that support the floor above at around 28 inches deep. So the first 28 inches is actually taken up with steel structure. And then below that, you have to put all your mechanical systems. Modern codes require more and more out of us with respect to mechanical systems. We have to bring in more fresh air to create a better environment for our employees. And so that requires ductwork to actually be much larger than it was. It's a much healthier space. It's a much better environment. But going down to 12 feet is paramount to building a house and going to build 8-foot ceilings in a house. It's just not done. It's not practical. It's not reasonable. It doesn't create an environment that's conducive to business, to a great environment for your employees. It will help attract employees. So we're not coming at this saying that, hey, I need something specifically for no reason. We're coming at this with hoping for you to understand that there's a real reason why we need to have a minimum of 14 feet. So we're already below the recommended minimums. In addition to that, we've taken accessory structures off the roof and modified our system so that we can have a chilled air system instead of rooftop units so that we can get that some of that equipment off of the roof to lower them. We've insured 3-story structures as we transition into the non-commercial areas. We think that's really critical. That's always been kind of part of our plan. And we've also changed the architecture itself as you transition into those residential neighborhoods. The elevation that you just saw on the screen had some reasonably large glass and glazing along the frontage of Whitaker Street, which no one will really ever see, but will provide great benefits in terms of light harvesting for clients and for employees in the particular building. But as you transition out onto the sides, you'll see a more residential scale in those windows as you go down. That's not by accident. That's because designers were very thoughtful on how we approach this. Our design started as a community walk, including designers walking around the park, identifying and having discussions about which buildings were significant and why. We like this, we don't like that. And that's what inspired. And we took elements from around the park to make sure that those elements supported the architectural design here in our particular project. We've been careful to make sure that we hire LS3P. LS3P has a local office. It's headed by Neil Dawson, who's going to speak here in a minute. He's been on the Historic Savannah Board. He is extremely sensitive to integrating office and residential and has been doing it both in the Historic and the Victorian Neighborhood District for the last 30 years. So we have not hired outside architects that aren't sensitive to how this, you know, development should come together. We're actually very excited about the diversity of the architecture, the change in scale and the height, the creation of some open spaces by splitting open or splitting up those particular buildings. And so we would hope that when you get down to consider this today, that you will understand that our request is for 6 feet and 8 feet, 6 feet on the four-story buildings and 8 feet on the other building. And we want you to support that. One, because it's functionally required, but two, it also promotes good design. And the ordinance is a great guideline. However, you know, when we have an opportunity to do something significant like this, it's really important that we let good designers design, good sensitive designers that are experienced in that particular craft. Neil, if you want to walk me through some of the architecture.
Thanks, Jeff. As Jeff said, practiced in Savannah for 36 years. I've served not on this board, but I'm Neil Dawson with LS3P. Thank you. Served on a lot of boards, Historic Review, ZBA, Historic Savannah's board. I actually live in the Forsyth ward. So this is, you know, something that I'm going to experience every day and I want it to be right. And I think we've done a good job about it. I will say I wanted to kind of just go back through the heights again so that it's very clear. I don't know if you can see the screen, but this building three, we agree with staff, three stories. It's going to be actually 43 feet, so it's going to be less than what's allowed by right. So that building is fully compliant now. And building one, although it is four stories, that fourth story is set back. And so the view from the street line would be 43 feet. So in my mind, as somebody that walks the park, you know, multiple times a day, it's going to look like a three-story building. It's going to look compliant. Yes, the middle part is set back and it's higher, so it does require a variance from this board. And this building on the corner, building two, we're proposing four stories as it's perceived from the street with the fifth story set back as well. Again, that does require the variance, so the staff is correct in their assessment. But again, as the pedestrian experiences this building, both from the Whitaker Street and when you get all the way over to Drayton looking back at it, you won't perceive it as four and five. You'll perceive it as three and four. And so I wanted to go back up to the rendering, which is somewhere in here. Yeah, so again, 43 feet in my mind is what that building on the right looks like, even though it is four stories. And when you get back to it, it is higher. And the building on the left is four stories. And in my mind, you perceive it as 57 feet. Not as 71, but that is 71 as the building's recessed in the back. I will say that we've taken a lot of time and it's been a very good, interactive time with all of the public input. We've taken this building. If you recall, we originally had one building and it's now two separate buildings connected with a hyphen that's set way back. The buildings are separated enough that it feels like a generous space that you could walk down. If you'll notice on the site plan that alley goes all the way back through to Barnard Street. So again, it's creating more of a public access and access to the park, but we think it's positive. We think the building on the corner merits the fourth story and not just three because first of all, we don't want it to look monotonous of three buildings in a row that have kind of the same height, mass and scale. We feel like the fourth is merited because it's an important building. It's a public building because it creates the access to parking and it has some exhibitions and other things that are publicly interactive as well as the bathrooms and other public functions. So we feel like that's merited. We spent a lot of time working through the details so that, as Jeff said, that the windows are more glazing on the Whitaker side where you have higher traffic and
more of a commercial feel. And then as you turn the corner, well, let me see that other rendering. Where'd it go? I've totally messed up your presentation now. And so when you turn the corner, more punched openings. I guess I did that right. I don't know. And smaller scale, more refined detail. You notice that the brick detailing is very refined in terms of its massing. I had to laugh when staff said that, you know, buildings of this scale and monumentality are either loved or hated. I'm one of the people that voted against the Telfair, the Jepson Center, because I thought it was too much. My taste, I think we've tried to design a building that meets all the visual compatibility standards in a way that's respectful and timeless. Yes, it's a little more traditional than the Jepson Center, but that's my personal take on what it takes to make a building that'll last for 50 years in Savannah. And I'm proud to be the architect on it, and I would appreciate your support on the design. Thanks.
Questions for staff or the applicant?
Yes.
Go ahead.
For the petitioner, what your compromise here is for building one being 4 stories, 57 feet, building two, 5 stories and 71 feet, and building three, 3 stories and 43 feet. So I have a question for Mr. Morrow. On that third building, with it being 3 stories, are we looking at 3 full stories or 2 full stories and a setback third, or?
It sounds like the petitioner is intending to continue to develop consistent with the site plan that we're seeing. Sorry, I just want to jump back here. It seems like even though the third building would be compliant, they're intending to maintain the setbacks and not recoup that additional, like, lost floor area.
So would it be 2 full stories and then the setback third, or would we be looking at 3 full stories?
So by saying we don't want the fourth story, what we're saying is we're not requesting any variance at all for that particular building.
Okay, so just for my curiosity, are we looking from street view at a 2-story building in appearance?
3-story.
So from street view, it
would
be
3 stories. Yes, full 3 stories.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Stevens, go ahead.
To that effect, did I understand you correctly that full 3-story building would be 43 versus the 45 permitted?
We can do it. To be honest with you, I'd prefer 45, but we can live with 43. But we don't need to – I guess my point was we don't need to request a variance for that. But if you want to approve something with a condition, we can certainly live with 43.
Okay. I have a few things, and let me just preface what I'm going to say. Like, I'm solely here for the capacity of upholding this ordinance and – being supportive of smart and intelligent growth in the community. I'm pro-development and all of this good stuff. So if it seems like I'm going to ask some questions that might be tough, I might. And if it works, it works. But I wanted to kind of get some clarification. I think Mr. Dawson made mention of three buildings, and he actually referred to it as two. Which is it actually legally two, or
it's – it's three buildings, floor? But they're connected on the second, third, and fourth floor by a glass. I don't know what the technical code requirement is or description.
Yeah, since you're a design professional, you understand they're two separate buildings by building code,
right?
But they share each other as a horizontal exit. So,
right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm with you. When you said that you guys did not need all of this initially to make this project successful, did I hear that? Didn't you say that at one point? Just want to be clear on.
Yes, we have. So this design is a result of kind of a community approach, right? We have met and talked and collaborated. There are some things that would have to be way less efficient and way less desirable, but we can still live with that. But this doesn't, it's not going to be as good a design. We think it's appropriate to take that lot there for residential and use that as residential. The truth is all the existing use there is office and funeral home, which I'm not sure what category that is. And then we're not asking to change a use. We're going to continue to do it office and then downzone some residential along where the residential street is on Whitaker. We think that's a better design, but we could, at the end of the day, we are trying to get a certain number of square footage, not for economic reasons, but because it supports the development agreement with the city and CETA and allows us to basically get the garage paid for for the city without them having to go talk to any taxpayers, without them hitting their general fund at all. And so that required us to get to a certain amount. And so this does it, but there are other ways. If you decide that these variances don't work, like for example, if you decide that 53 feet for a 5-story, it makes it a 4-story building for me. And I'm going to have to come back with something else because I can't do 4 or 5 stories within that number. I can't do, 4 stories within 51 feet. I'd have an functionally obsolete building day one.
And some of my questioning on that is you guys were here before and we made a significant upzone. And in that significant upzoning, when I particularly voted in favor of it, it was with the idea and understanding that this is what would make the project successful, opposed to needing more. So I guess my thing is I'm just really trying to navigate what you're saying and how we got from the significant upzoning to needing a little bit more.
So it really hasn't, I'm sure that's the perception, but that's not what has occurred. Okay. We honestly, this has been a challenge to navigate. How do we do a parking garage? What's zoning? What's the use? What's the traffic study? How do we collaborate with everybody? And then how do we accomplish and achieve the certain amount of density that we need to make the project work? So staff and everybody has always known that we've had a target. And then, honestly, we asked them, what's the approach? Do we file one petition and do both at the same time? The recommendation between, our attorney, counselors and staff was to split these petitions up. So we're here separately because that's what we were told that's the best way to approach this.
Okay. And I'm just trying to get an understanding of such. So, my last thing for the moment, I'm really struggling with the idea of the monumentality. I get it. I get architecturally, I wholeheartedly agree with the idea of the architecture being the monument itself. However, our ordinance reads something different. And that's where I kind of get hung up. And just being fair about us upholding our ordinance and still being able to have an objective perspective architecturally with the intent of what I believe your intent is or what has been communicated the intent is, our ordinance does not say it is based off of the architecture. Our ordinance explicitly says in the definition, it is based off of the use and the function. So I'm really struggling a little bit navigating the monumentality as a, not a cornerstone in the argument and or, but more of a supporting component to kind of drive this thing home. I get it. I understand the purpose. But for us to uphold our ordinance and the language that we have voted on to be our guiding principles, I'm struggling with the idea of the monumentality.
Yeah, so the label has never, honestly, until we got staff report, I'd never seen or kind of heard that term associated with this particular project. We've been in collaborating, changing, designing, going through heighting and massing exercises, getting input, and we've been focused on the architecture because that's what people are going to see. They're not going to see the label. And that architecture has attempted to be inspired by older historic buildings downtown, having a curved facade on that public entrance, you know, where the entry to the garage is going to be is similar to multiple other buildings, having art and kind of a significant architectural arch element as an entrance into that was inspired by other stuff that's down here. The label, I'm not sure that's for you all to decide whether that applies or it doesn't apply, but we've been developing this based upon an office use from day one. It's currently an office use. We want to keep it in office use. We think we have an opportunity to redevelop this site. It's very unique. We have almost an entire block on two sides of Howard Street, and it was unique and gave us an opportunity to work with the city to help solve some of their issues. And truthfully, that has to be paid for as well. And so we have been working with all these other neighborhood groups to kind of come up and tweak and modify these designs. And so this is truly a community design.
Okay.
That's all I have for now. Thank you.
I have a follow-up on something you just told, Mr. Stephen. It's fine. You said you are potentially, depending on if you don't get what you're asking for today, you'll have to kind of rejigger what your, you know, layout of all the buildings and everything is. Would potentially you're going to have to take away some of the residential to get back what you're, you know, would potentially lose. Would that be accurate to say?
We have to go back and evaluate with the architects and engineers relative to whatever is approved here today, what's the best way to still accomplish this if we can. I don't know what that is. Our last exercise, we came up with six different options of height and massing. And then we had a practical discussion, you know, with HSF and with staff, and they gave us a direction. They said, of all these ones, we think this is the better direction. So then we started moving in that direction, and that brings us here. If someone says that direction is no longer, you know, our vision, then we'll have to go back and re-envision it to see if we can make it work another way.
It could potentially reduce the amount of residential coverage. Is that fair to say?
I'm saying there's a block of land that is there that we think is appropriate to have be residential on Whitaker. I would love to see that stay as residential. I'm confident, and I've not asked the questions, but the residents that live on Whitaker Street would probably be more open to having more residential there as well. I think that's a win for everybody. You know, we've been trying to be very respectful of how we use this height by setting it back, looking at view quarters. And like I said, we're not obstructing people's views. You know, we're opening up view corridors that, you know, frankly are just, you know, paved parking lots right now. So honestly, this is a pretty exciting design and a pretty exciting opportunity, but we need the 6 and 8 feet.
I'm sorry. You're saying residential on Whitaker or Wahlberg?
Wahlberg.
Okay. Sorry.
Wahlberg. I'm sorry. Yeah, the gray rectangle you see on the screen. I'm sorry.
Other comments? Go ahead, Ms. Amon.
So what's more profitable to you, residential or commercial?
So the owners of this particular building are owner-occupying. We are not selling this building to make money. We are moving all of our businesses. We are going to be local, and we're going to be operating our business, and we are going to be paying rent. The residential, I used to be in residential, as you know. Mm-hmm. We have not done a single thing other than figure out what the footprints would be structurally in the garage. I don't know even what the market is, whether it's townhomes, condos. I don't know whether somebody else would build it. I don't know if we build it. We've literally not even had a discussion about it. What we would do there, other than it makes more sense to do residential there. Honestly, once we do the office and do that, eventually we'll figure that piece out. Is it a for sale product? Is it a for rent product? I imagine the neighborhood would probably want for sale. So we'd probably, you know, we're signing this good neighbor agreement. And so that'll be part of the discussion we have with them.
Well, that's why I'm asking that for our board is if we are telling them take it down and use that residential land for commercial, are we doing the right thing for the neighborhood?
Well, let's hold on. There is no mention of residential in anything that I read or in our pre-meeting today. We never said residential. Now we're talking residential. How moving a target is this?
This square has been set aside and designated for future land use as residential since day one. And that's why it's just sitting there as a gray box.
Are we talking about one of these four buildings or are we talking about?
No, that gray square. Okay. Right now it's just a surface. It's just a surface lot.
Okay.
And that's where, and that would put the residential facing the other residential properties on Wahlberg.
We're mixing apples and oranges.
If I may, just from a profitability standpoint, that's not even really in our purpose.
Well, we're making a decision based
on. We're not talking about residential right now. Let's let Mr. Morrow tell us what we're talking about.
Just to offer a bit, and I know I threw out a word there that we're not used to in this context, and that's for good reason. It's an architectural term that lives in a zoning ordinance. And so what we're wanting to do is import architectural sort of imagery around this word. When you're asking for a variance, you need a justification. If you don't have a justification, the answer is no, right? So under certain circumstances, you've got a hardship because it's topographic. Most of our variances that we see are actually cadastral hardships. You've got zoning that has just basically said you don't have enough of whatever the case may be, right? So we're importing an architectural term into a zoning context to say that this is the basis on which we're going to situate the relief. Let's not necessarily even specifically look at the architecture that's being proposed here. Design is within the purview of HPC. You are being asked today to evaluate the appropriateness of variances.
And the property on Wahlberg, close to Barnard, that is grayed out there is not part of our discussion.
It is not within the scope, but that is to, again, underscore the fact that this came to us as a governmentally driven product. This is not something that just came out of nowhere. It has been an ongoing conversation. There are multiple partners in this, as evidenced by that agreement. It's not something that can be untangled. There are a number of things that when you push it in one place, something's going to poke out.
And I do apologize because I remember reading something about apartments in here and going, what are they talking about?
This has always been a package. It is not a singular developer doing something. It is a public-private partnership. And the way that it looks is the result of the public-private partnership and the interest that each particular partner has in what it is that is being proposed. Again, design standards are going to be debated by HPC.
And if I may, just to get, I guess, get you guys back on point.
Thank you.
The items that we are discussing are the three buildings. Period.
Thank you.
That is what, we're here to talk about. That other grayed out area has not really been subject of any discussion, and it very well may not be here. It may be something that is just solely handled by the historic board because they could meet the ordinance, as it currently stands. You're here to deal with these three buildings and to make a decision about whether the heights that the applicant has proposed are appropriate or whether the heights that staff has recommended is the more appropriate height.
So
that's for right now, yeah. That's what the focus needs to be on. And if they have to make some concessions with the design, that really is up to them. We don't know what they're going to have to do for design because historic hasn't heard it yet. They will design based on whatever the heights are that you all approve. And remember, they might be able to do something in 43 feet, but what you're approving are ceilings. So if you make a recommendation for building three, that 45 feet, then that's the max that the building can be. If he wants to do 40 feet, he can do 40 feet. If he wants to do 42, he can do 42. Gotcha. He just can't go over 45. So remember, these are maximums, not minimums. And they will have they kind of need some direction so that they can go to the Historic Preservation Commission with improved designs that they will look at and make comments.
Two quick points. One, I apologize for bringing that residential piece up. It was only in light of a question related to how we would have to revision, you know, should we not get approved here. The other component that is pertinent to this is that one of the things we tried to do in the design was avoid the mistake that was done at the Ellis Square parking lot where you have out ramps to parking garages that are outside that are just big concrete masses in an area where you have all these particular pedestrians kind of coming and going. And so that's why the footprint so we lose a lot of square footage, almost 4,000 plus square feet of first floor footage on building one just to accommodate that ramp. And just because we brought that inside the building so we could avoid that particular mistake. But when we lose that square footage on the first floor to provide a better design, I'm trying to put it somewhere, which is why we're trying to respectfully fit that fourth floor back in, but still set it back.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Jepson.
Wait a minute. I think Ms. Amick had the floor.
I'm good.
Okay.
So is your your entire ramp for the in and out is at building one?
Yes.
Well, on Howard Street?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And
just within inside the building footprint.
The building footprint. Okay. And I just want to clarify something with Mr. Morrow, if I may. You were referring to an architectural term. Was that the monumental term that you were talking to when you were just
exactly?
Yeah. Okay. Just making sure. Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Other comments, questions?
Okay, I have some. As a municipal engineer, I am very, very well acquainted with citizen input. I have been in public meetings where I have been skewered because of citizen input, which may happen today. I don't know. But I did want to ask a couple of questions. One, in your narrative, you talk about the parking deck will have 290 spaces. And then on the next page, you talk about 437 spaces. And there seems to be some confusion on the buildings, which one is which, when I was looking at the descriptions. Do we have a really clear idea of what it is we plan to do?
Yes, we plan. I don't know which narrative. That might be somebody's typo. The garage has been designed with, I think it's 437 spaces.
Okay. It has 290
and it's
on
three
one
stories
sheet.
Underground parking garage.
Okay. When this development agreement came before council, was there public discussion about what was being planned before the development agreement came before council? That's where I have a real heartburn, is did the public know what was being considered before the development agreement was agreed
to?
So
we met and gave a presentation of the proposed development before the development with the VNA prior to, and that was most of
the
discussion. We walked them through. At that time, I don't know whether we had the actual traffic study complete by that time, but then we've since shared that traffic study with the VNA, with the city. Absolutely. Public has been involved all through this. And, of course, public meetings here. The city's had their own public meetings.
Before the development agreement?
Yes.
Okay. I think that was my major concern, was whether we had gotten that in. And I think I'm done.
Yeah, and we...
Anybody else? All right. We have a large number of cards of people requesting to speak. I know Mr. Jones and his contingent would like 15 minutes. I cannot allow more than 10 minutes unless some of these other people give up their time. 2 minutes, I'm sorry. Unless other people can give up their time. Everybody gets 2 minutes who's on my, that I have a card for. All right. Take it over to Ms. Helm, please. All right.
Are you asking for giving up now?
Yes, what I'll do is I'll call Mr. Jones up, and anyone who wants to give Mr. Jones his time can speak up now. How's that?
I'll give
one. Okay, Ms. Woods is willing to give up 2 minutes. I'm sorry.
Madam Chairman.
Just a minute.
He's saying that Matt, Executive Director Wilson, suggested we maybe take a brief recess, I guess, just to sort out. Is that accurate?
Yes. My recommendation is that you take maybe a 3 minute or 5 minute recess. And let them be coordinated to talk amongst themselves.
That works
for me.
And once they
do that, then we can get a list of the names. That will give him a chance to write down the names of people that are going to give them his time, so we have them to match the cards.
That works.
And we can move on from there.
I motion we do
clear.
That.
Do I have a second? Okay, all in favor, voice vote. All right, so we'll take 5 minutes recess and Mr. Jones can converse with the individuals here. Thank you.
I'm going to
Yeah.
Can we get back together here? Deep breath. He'll tell me, or she'll tell me. Yes. You need to talk with those two gentlemen over there. They're the ones who control all of the. And you had mentioned it in the past. Okay. All right. I'm going to go for 2 minutes for everybody, and he gets four. Are we ready? Okay. So my understanding is, Mr. Jones, you're getting Ms. Wood's time, and that is it. But I'm going to go ahead and call you up if you would like to come up and state your name for the record, please.
Good afternoon. Andrew Jones. I'm an attorney with Thomerson, Jones, and Edwards, and my firm represents Clara Gregg and Tana Felicia Flagg, who are two neighbors of the proposed office building. My firm sent you a letter in opposition on their behalf with exhibits. I hope that you have read through it carefully, and that has been entered into the record by Ms. Helms. On behalf of our clients, on February the 7th, my firm filed a petition for review of the rezoning and Flum Amendment with the Superior Court of Chatham County pursuant to the Georgia Zoning Procedures Law. With the petition having been filed, the Georgia Zoning Procedures Law provides for a stay of all proceedings in furtherance of the rezoning and Flum Amendment. We maintain that this hearing today, which is predicated on the rezoning and Flum Amendment, therefore violates the stay, and that any decision made in this hearing on this matter will therefore be void under Georgia law. Of course, the city does not agree with us, but we maintain that position. Our firm sent a letter last Friday to the city attorney, county attorney, and executive director of the MPC demanding that the MPC respect the stay and not have this hearing, and that Ms. Helms also entered into the record. Moreover, the application for these variances, the very applications you are looking at today, do not comply with the zoning procedures law, which requires disclosures by the applicants and their agents of campaign contributions. That's the law. The application, which is posted online, it's part of the record. You can look at it and go through it page by page. It includes what are purportedly the required disclosure forms, but there's no form for Jeff Jepson, who gave thousands of dollars to city council members. Also missing is a form for Hunter McLean, which also donated through its PAC. And the disclosure form signed by Mr. Pattison omits the thousands of dollars of his own contributions. Also defective is the certification of the accuracy of the application, which was signed by someone who was not the authorized agent. The authorized agent was Jeff Jepson. You may think that this sounds really minor, but the bottom line is if you don't follow the zoning procedures law, what you do is void, period. It's very, very strict. Notwithstanding the above, the proposed variances are unconstitutional under the Georgia and federal constitutions because they pose significant detriment to my client's property rights, serve primarily the interests of private parties, and are substantially, insubstantially related to the public health, safety, morality, or general welfare. My client's property will be particularly harmed by the rezoning Flum Amendment and proposed variances, all of which are for the benefit of Hunter McLean, the parcel's owners, and the developers. The rezoning Flum Amendment and proposed variances also constitute unlawful spot zoning. The rezoning Flum Amendment and proposed variances constitute a manifest abuse of power by the city against its citizens. The petition of review contends that the city was aware of the deficiencies of the application's disclosures and fraudulently concealed such deficiencies. Such concealment gives the appearance of a corrupt pay-to-play scheme, which undermines the confidence of the public in the city's legislative process. That same contention applies to the application for the variances that you're reviewing today. Accordingly, we demand that the MPC decline to rule on this application. It doesn't follow the law. Notwithstanding the foregoing, in the event you render a decision, we recommend that it be denied for the reasons set forth above. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Jones? All right. Next on my list, I have Elizabeth Hollis. Please state your name for the record.
I'm Elizabeth Hollis. We have lived on Whitaker Street for 40 years and treasure the neighborhood. We enjoy having Victorian homes around us, and we just hope that the nature of all that area is going to remain that way. It's a little difficult to embrace this variant, this height variance, in addition to the other variances that were already granted for this project. One of my main concerns has changed since I've been sitting here. I'm concerned that the traffic is going to be increased on Howard Street, which is our little quiet place where we can go from the front of the house where Whitaker is so busy and the back of the house where courtyards are and children play. And I wish that someone in here could elaborate on what the traffic's going to be like on Howard Street if there is exiting and entering and exiting for the project there. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the or for Ms. Hollis? Thank you. Tom Hollis?
I'm Tom Hollis, the husband of Betsy Hollis, who just spoke. I live on the 800 block of Whitaker Street, and our courtyard is on Howard Street. Those of us who live on Howard Street and the adjacent neighborhoods are like-minded in thinking that the proposed office complex, park, and Whitaker will be too large of a project for our neighborhood, especially if the variances are permitted. According to the Victorian Historic District Overlay, the overall height should be visually compatible with contributing buildings and structures to which it is visually related. The variances in height conflict with that intent and therefore should not be permitted. One thing that's very important to point out is that that was the Victorian Neighborhood Association Board that approved this. They did not poll the membership. They did not ask what the majority of people thought about it, and we've had some very contentious meetings with the Victoria Neighborhood Association because the board took that position without asking any of the membership. And that's been quoted over and over and over again, that the Victoria Neighborhood Association was in favor of this project. And that was the board, not the membership of the Victoria Neighborhood Association. We've lived at this address over 40 years and want to minimize the negative impact this project will have on our neighborhood, and especially the quiet Howard Street. I hope that you will not allow these variances for this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. The next one, I'm having a little difficulty with the name, James.
Dalton,
probably, yes.
Good afternoon. My name is James Dalton. I live on, where do we live? Anyway, I'm here as a civilian, so to speak, not a professional, but since these worthy professionals laid out their credentials, I'd like to add mine. I spent 45 years in commercial real estate around the world. One gentleman talked about 1 million square feet. I think I could probably factor that by 100. The largest problem being the Time Warner building in New York, which had a total cost of $1.8 billion. Anyway, I'm here just to say that I didn't know anything about this until some kind person put a pamphlet in my door on Saturday. And then I started to find out about it. So this whole thing is somewhat astounding to me. I did approach the historical committee here some time ago about adding 3 small windows in the side of my all brick house. And it was turned down because it would destroy the fabric of the building. Now, I was disappointed that that was the decision, but I was kind of reassured that if things were going to be that strict, there wouldn't be much in the way of change. And then I got this brochure.
You have 30 seconds.
So I would recommend to the board that they be as diligent as the historic committee was about the fabric of the building and apply that to the fabric of the neighborhood. And I do, was it Tom? Gentleman that just spoke over there. I was out to dinner with the president and her husband within the last 2 weeks.
Time's over.
Yeah, no hint of anything going on. So again, I do not think that the residents have been sufficiently involved in this project, and frankly should.
Thank you. Any questions?
I have one. Denied? You said the historic review board.
You come back to the microphone.
Sorry? Go back to the microphone.
Yeah, sorry.
You said that the historic review board denied your windows?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
And the purpose of the window was to let a little more light shine into my house.
Thank you.
Natural light.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom Kiko? Please state your name for the
record. Good afternoon. Tom Kikot.
Because.
We live on Duffy Street, about a block and a half away from the proposed site. My wife has lived there for 20 years, myself 10. I walk by the site every day on my walk to Forsyth Park. I think something that has not been covered by anybody, in this hearing at least, is what exists around the site now. Kitty Corner is a single story. Cross the street, single story. The building number 3 adaptation that the staff recommends is, I think, should be applied to all 3 buildings. Why there should be a giant monument of 5 stories on this busy corner when everything else in the neighborhood is much smaller. There's that one apartment building on Whitaker that's an anomaly. But other than that, 3 stories is as much as we have. A good example is the law building that went in at the corner of Bull and Park a few years ago. Three stories, fits with the vibe in the neighborhood, looks like it's been there forever. These buildings will not. They will be burdensome and extremely large, and like the other gentleman said, we just heard about this on Saturday with the flyer. So all the neighbors on my street work. I'm self-employed, so I was able to come out to represent us, but this is a broadside, and it's not going to fit in with the vibe of Forsyth Park. And they say the sight lines won't be affected. It's going to be huge. It's taller than the trees. So I hope that the variance is denied. For those of us that live in the neighborhood, we don't want it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Mr. Hunsrucker?
Hello, my name is James Hunsrucker. Yes, I was one of those that were handing out the flyers on the weekend. You're welcome. Mayor Johnson stated January 9th, we are a city of people and residences, not STVRs walking towards traffic, truck traffic and warehouses, unquote. He asked this to be a guiding principle. I dare add obstructive developments to his list. I suggest that the city revoke their agreement with the developer and CEDA to protect residents from this obtrusive development, which would reduce the use and function. And after generations of preservationist efforts creating this jewel of Savannah that which draws visitors, citizens are now having to defend these attractions from our own city leadership. This lack of protection undermines the historic Savannah fabric and the citizens' constitutional rights. I would also add that there was no hearing in City Hall for this agreement, for this garage. There was no public hearing before any building was discussed. There were no plans presented at the VNA that I'm aware of. Also, the traffic folks, I was a part of the community on the west side who attended the meetings with the city, and the traffic folks denied the applicant study. The traffic folks denied the applicant's study of the park, the traffic flows. Also, the parking services say there is no benefit to the city because people are not willing to park in a garage. They're more willing to park five blocks away than in a parking garage. And this good neighborhood agreement is not legally binding, just so you know. And pedestrians experiencing the Victorian district is more important than a standalone 73-foot tall building that's self-aggrandizing. Thank you.
Thank you. Clara Gregg?
Hi, my name is Clara Gregg. I live at 202 West Park. I am opposed to this variance request. There are many reasons this project does not belong in our neighborhood. First and foremost, specific to this request, decline in property values. When people come to the neighborhood, they are looking for historic charm. They're not looking for towering office buildings. The applicant points to other buildings in the neighborhood that meet these height requirements, but these buildings are churches, schools, residential. They're not office buildings. A statement was made earlier that the height of these buildings do not obstruct any views, which is completely false. All of the homes on West Park will be directly impacted by the building on the corner and the building on Park and Barnard. Also, a loss of privacy. I'm going to have an office building full of people looking directly into both my bedrooms, looking down into my fully fenced-in backyard. I also maintain that the VNA is working in the best interest of their board members, not of the neighborhood. I understand the need for development and evolution. However, the development should be in harmony with the surrounding historic neighborhood and prioritize the well-being of the residents. Development should be focused on preserving the historical architecture and enhancing the Victorian district
rather than allowing massive commercial expansion that primarily benefits the few who have the means for such a project. A project of this scale is a dangerous gateway to the destruction of our historic neighborhoods that are living, breathing views into past architectural and historical significance of our city.
Thank you. Hannah Felicia Flagg.
Thank you. My name is Tana Felicia Flagg, and I am one of those residents that is severely impacted. Our little home, a two-story home, prior a church, with a wonderful porch that we enjoy, looks right into Howard Street. And so when we sit on our porch, when that development is finished, we will be looking at a monument. We didn't move to Savannah to look at monuments. We moved because of the quality of the neighborhood. My husband and I contribute to our neighborhood. All of this that's happening now causes us to feel as though we are so impacted by this project that we have looked at a realtor, and the value of our house, we were told, would go down because of this construction and because of what it's going to do to the value of our neighborhood. To have this plunked in the middle of our beautiful, quiet neighborhood. And I'm not against modernization. However, I believe that the development should be in harmony with existing neighborhoods and prioritize the well-being of residents. We live here. We give back here. I don't know how many of the people who will be occupying those huge stories live in our community, contribute to our community. They go home, and maybe they go home to places where they don't have to hear the noise from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. of large equipment entering and leaving the site and pounding the pavement. So I hope that you will see that this is something that the neighborhood does not want.
Thank you. Any questions? Josh Yellen.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, since Mr. Jones was submitting for the record his letter, I just do want to make sure.
Say your name for the record, please.
Josh Yellen, for the record. Making sure that you have received for the record the response to Mr. Jones's assertion. Thank you. I see Mr. Plunk is holding it up. We did want to make sure that it was formally entered into the record, the response from the City of Savannah, that the city's position that Mr. Jones has misinterpreted the statute, while it's correct that there has been a Superior Court case filed, it has no bearing on today's variance action. And so I did want to clarify that the request for a stay on this proceeding is invalid. This proceeding is completely unrelated to the TC2 rezoning, which is in question. As Mr. Jones knows, he can seek an injunction in that hearing. He has not tried to stop this from going forward, and he is trying to come here to stop it in a different means. The city says that is invalid, so we do believe that this proceeding should go forward. I also do just want to speak, obviously, in support of the project as well. Y'all have seen me here on many petitions within the Victorian District and the Mid-City District for properties that are zoned TC1 and TC2, such as this site. You see me a lot because there are lots of variances that are requested for almost all large-scale buildings in the city of Savannah, that there is, as Mr. Jepson mentioned, an inherent discrepancy between the ordinance and the actual building of structures. We've been here for multifamily buildings. We've been here for apartments. In each and every instance, we're often asking for the same thing, which is slight relief from the height standard. Y'all have approved those standards on MLK, on Montgomery, on East Broad, just down the street on Bull Street. People are talking about the Boone Falligant building. We all have short memories here. That building also needed significant variances in order to be built. And so we do respectfully request that you approve of today's variance. It's in keeping with past precedent from this board, and in fact is what makes these projects better. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I have some online folks. Any questions for Mr. Yellen? Online, I have Samantha Knowles. Ms. Knowles, are you there?
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me? Hello.
Is that Samantha Knowles?
Yes. My name is Gerald Neal. Samantha had to leave, so I'm speaking on her behalf.
Okay. What was your name?
My name is Gerald Neal.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Per the ordinance, the petitioner has the burden of proof and persuasion to show that the variance meets all the individual criteria for approval. The petitioner cherry-picks some criteria it contends satisfy the ordinance's requirements, but leaves out other criteria which it cannot satisfy. Number one, the variance, if granted, would not be the minimum variance necessary to make possible the reasonable use of land, buildings, or structures. The petitioner conveniently left out any discussion of this criterion, which must be satisfied in order for the three variances to be granted. The property abuts Forsyth Park. Of course, the land, buildings, or structures could be reasonably used without a height variance. Petitioner's land was already upzoned to the dismay of many residents in the area. Petitioner's variance definitely does not meet this requirement, and the ordinance requires that the variance be denied. The variance is not consistent with the intent of the ordinance and would be injurious to the neighborhood or otherwise detrimental to the public health and safety. In order for the variance to be consistent with the ordinance, the petitioner need to satisfy both the Victorian Historic Design Standards and the Victorian Historic Visual Compatibility Criteria. This is not a monument building. Petitioner desires to label it as such to avoid complying with the design standards. In petitioner's application, petitioner argues that all three proposed buildings will incorporate an education component that embraces and illuminates the unique history of Savannah. Come on, this is an office building on the grounds of one of the last historic African-American businesses in the Victorian district. Additionally, the petitioner acknowledges that roughly 250,000 square feet of commercial office space has been converted into other uses, creating an extremely high demand for office space to justify this use. Well, that's due in large part to Hunter McLean selling its large office building, which has now been converted to hotel use. Hunter McLean's partners are one of the partners in Forsyth Commons JV. They can't eat their cake and have
Thank
it too.
You. Time is up.
If I may, if you've got something else to send, you can email
yes.
it to us.
Wrap
and we'll
it up
make
real
it
quick.
Part of the record. They can email it and we'll put it as part of the record.
Mr. Neal? Did we lose him?
There's a lane. What's the name on there?
Samantha Knowles. Yeah, I think he's trying to get him back.
Hi, I'm here. Hello?
Okay. Did you want to wrap it up?
Thank you very much. I'd really appreciate that. I spent a lot of time doing this. Okay. According to Cushman Wakefield, Savannah's office overall vacancy dropped to 4.9% in the fourth quarter of 2024. Given the high demand for office space in Savannah, this investment promises to be a cash cow for petitioner, certainly once petitioner acquires fee title to the property once the bonds are paid off. They're making it sound like they're paying rent and they're not getting anything in return. When the bonds are paid off, they'll have fee simple title to the entire property. This will be a cash cow for the elite in Savannah. The more rentable square face, rentable office space equates to more money for the petitioner. Also, I just, in closing, if you could look at page 200 of the combined public comments, that shows the flooding at the intersection of Barnard and Wahlberg. Tom McDonald of the city said that the pipes in this location are not designed for the level of density, let alone office space. Adding height to that location would be dense.
All right, I have Elaine Pickard. Online. Ms. Pickard, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I'm Elaine Pickard.
If you state your name for the record.
Elaine Pickard. My residence is located at 815 Whitaker Street, about a block from the proposed development. I purchased this property because it was located in a district that was primarily residential, not commercial. I am asking that you enforce the existing TC2 height regulation of 45 feet and deny the height variances requested by the developer. According to the City of Savannah Code of Ordinances, the traditional neighborhood districts were established to allow residential-oriented mixed-use development, but also to restrict the development to non-residential uses that are considered compatible with the residential character of the neighborhood. The zoning regulations were written to ensure that new development in the Victorian District would be compatible with the residential character of the neighborhood. They were written to ensure that the residential character of the neighborhood would be preserved. They were written so that the quality of life enjoyed by the citizens of the Victorian District would be maintained. The zoning ordinance for commercial development in the Victorian Neighborhood District were written with the interest of the residential property owners in mind. The size, scale, and mass of the proposed commercial development are not consistent with the intent of the ordinances, nor with the residential character of the neighborhood. Not only are the proposed buildings over the story and height limitations, the proposed commercial buildings are a total of approximately 116,000 square feet, much larger than any of the existing commercial structures in the vicinity of Forsyth Park. In addition, two of the proposed building footprints are 22,000 plus square feet, well over the 10,000 square foot limit. Granting this variance will be detrimental to the public health, safety, and welfare for the following reasons. Flooding. Flooding is an existing problem in the city. The sidewalks on Whitaker in the vicinity of Walnut.
Left, please.
How much time do I have?
10 seconds.
Oh, 10 seconds. Yeah, I'm asking that you deny the request. I mean, the building over at One West Park Avenue was built in 2013. They wanted a variance for height, but they were limited to three stories based on the ordinances in existence, three stories and 45 feet. And I think granting the variance is just going to benefit the developer. It's not going to benefit the residents. In fact, the residents are going to suffer the consequences of it. In terms of the noise and congestion and everything else.
Thank you. William Dallas.
Hello?
Mr. Dallas, are you there?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Yes, can you hear me? Yeah. This is William Dallas. I'm a property owner in the neighborhood about a block from this development site. And I wanted to also add my voice to opposition to the project in general. And to agree with disapproving the variance. One thing that I brought up in previous MPC meetings, and I want to reiterate again, in addition to the other opposition items that have been voiced, is the parking garage. Adding 300 to 500 parking spaces will change the character of the neighborhood dramatically with traffic and the number of vehicles moving in and around that area, which is primarily residential. And that's my main opposition to the whole project. Thank you very much for your time to speak.
Thank you. All right, our last speaker is Lynn Gulledge.
Yes, Lynn Gulledge. I'm a property owner actually directly across on West Park, across from Building 3. And I can empathize with the builders and developers and all the work that's gone into what's been presented. But I, like the other neighbors and property owners, would like to request that the vote go against the allowance for an increased maximum height. One issue that hasn't been mentioned, there's been a lot of talk about the height and the views from the park, but what about the views from West Park? I'm at Bernard West Park. And so, you know, it's a significant change. And I, like the others, think that with some ingenuity and great design work, that a lot can be done within the current allowable heights for the TC2. I mean, it, you know, the zoning's already been changed. So let's work within it and deny this increase in height. And see if we can find some harmony between the developers and the residences here. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. That was all the speakers that I had. Mr. Jepson, would you like to come up and rebut?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Mr. Jeff Jepson with the petitioner. First off, I want to make the point that we are also residents. We live and serve in this community and serve on boards and have been part of this community for an extended period of time. I moved here because I got stationed here in the Army, and I chose to live here because I too love this particular city. So we are very sensitive, and which is why we've had so many particular meetings. We will meet with anyone that has requested to meet with us. We will continue to do that. We have done that so far. There's no one we said, hey, you've asked for a meeting, and then we've said, no, we're not willing to meet with you. So I want to make that clear. In terms of notice, again, I believe this is probably, there's been more public meetings here than anywhere else. In addition to that, before we got started, I personally did 4 newspaper interviews and 1 TV interview, every single one of them published. And I gave them pictures and a full story of what our intent was. It talked about the garage. So I don't know how to make this more public. We contacted the VNA. They packed the room, including elected officials, to the 3 meetings that I attended. And so I'm not sure how someone could not know that this was going out there, but we certainly made an attempt to be as inclusive as possible. With respect to parking, there were a couple concerns related to parking. We have done an extensive parking study. That study has been very favorable. The only recommended improvements, even after the garage and the office is there, and it was a very conservative study because we didn't back out the existing office that's on the property, was really an improvement in pedestrian traffic. They wanted some stop signs to improve pedestrian connectivity to the park on weekends. So we have a very, very robust and good traffic situation related to this particular development. With that said, there are a number of residents that have raised some concerns on Howard Street that we've actually shared with the city. And so we've started talking with the city about some traffic calming or some deterrence to get people, because that does serve more as a lane, not necessarily in between our building, which would be improved, but on the other areas, I think there is some good planning that they could benefit from. In terms of community benefits, people were concerned about that. We talked to the city very early on about this. We worked out an arrangement where the city did not have to pay money for this land. We're actually donating the money to the city. We then figured out a path and a plan to build the garage and get the garage paid for without affecting any taxpayers. It doesn't affect the school board. The county still gets their millage rate. The city currently will still get their current millage rate. And at the end of the day, we will not own the garage. The city will own the garage. So there's people asking for community benefits. The city decided, based upon their global master plan, that they long have needed a better parking solution in and around the park. And we, because we had enough property in a location that worked for them, they were the ones that said, hey, this would be a good solution to work together on. With respect to the VNA, honestly, we appreciate everything. I know the board has been taking a lot of criticism, so we apologize to those elected officials, but those are the elected officials of the particular neighborhood association. Those were the people that we had to work through, and we met with them privately to give them updates and get their guidance and get their input, and then we would brief that back to the VNA as a whole. I didn't have their mailing list. I didn't email everybody directly. We were relying on them to do that, and so it certainly wasn't our intent to not include those folks. Sorry, I'm having trouble reading my own handwriting. So I guess to sum up, for these variances, please understand that our design has made lots of sacrifices along the way and lots of challenges that if we didn't give up, then we probably wouldn't be here asking for 6 feet and 8 feet, 6 feet on the 4-story and 8 feet on the 5-story. But we think good designers must be able to design. We think that this design, because of the input from all these people, is a much better design than somebody forcing us to come back. We've made really good attempts to make sure that that extra height is actually set back and located in positions that make it less obtrusive and less visible. I mean, we've been trying to make steps and approvals. However, it is important for us in the scope of this particular project to get a certain amount of square footage. And but we feel like we have a really good design. You know, we have a really good parking garage without making the same mistakes that we've made in the past. We've increased green spaces. We've included, I won't say the residential part, but other areas of future development along those corridors. We've specifically designed the architecture, and we have a long way to go to get through HPC, but we've specifically designed this to fit into the community. And then again, the 6 and 8 feet request today is only related to buildings 1 and 2. Building 3, we agree with staff's recommendation. We're forgoing 4 stories there, and we would recommend that just remain at the with no variance for building 3.
Thank you.
Thank
Any
you.
Questions? All right, thank you. Discussion?
Madam Chairlady?
Yes.
At first, I just want to make a comment. I've been in this commission a long time, and I don't think I've ever had a petitioner come or someone from the audience come and demand this commission see things their way and vote that way. I'm appalled by that, Mr. Jones. I don't have anybody put a demand on this commission just to see things your way. And to pick a man on what his contributions are politically has nothing to do with this project. And I don't appreciate that. And I don't think that should have been brought forward to this commission, Madam Chairlady.
Thank you, Mr. Welch.
I'm prepared to make a motion.
All right.
Cole's motion to allow for a variance in height and stories as follows. Building 1, 4 stories at 57 feet. Building 2, 5 stories at 71 feet. And building 3, 3 stories at 45 feet.
Jeff Notrika, second.
All right. I have a motion and a second on the floor.
So the motion is to allow a variance in height and story count. For building 1, it's 4 stories and 57 feet. Building 2, 5 stories and 71 feet. And building 3, 3 stories and 45 feet. So essentially on here, the request side, 1 and 2 stays the same, and 3 comes from the staff recommendation.
May I propose an amendment to add the condition that the final project maintain compatibility with what's been presented here as far as the setbacks on the top floors?
Yes, I would like to include that. So the top story of these buildings should be reflective of what we see before us as far as setting back the top story. So the perceived height of the structure is not these actual heights, but what you see from street view.
Except for building 3.
Correct, except for building 3, which will be the 45 feet, full floor, 3 stories.
So we got to vote on the amendment, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't think we need to vote on the amendment because we didn't vote on the motion. Yes.
Yeah, we wouldn't have, if we would have voted on the motion, then the amendment wouldn't have really stood anyway.
So allow me to just withdraw my original motion and restate a motion cleanly.
Just want to make sure we do it from a procedural standpoint.
Coles, make the motion to allow for a variance in height and stories for building 1, 4 stories and 57 feet. Building 2, 5 stories at 71 feet. Building 3, 3 stories at 45 feet.
Or no variance.
With the condition that buildings 1 and 2 step back their top floor as reflected in these images that we see in this petition, and that building 3 may maintain all 3 floors at full floor size.
Jeff Nutrick is second.
All right. I have a motion and a second on the floor. Are there any questions? Ms. Amick? Mr. Kegler?
Yeah, I was going to ask Mr. Marr to come back to the podium. You know, the motion is different from what staff recommended. Can you kind of go into your rationale with the height in buildings 1 and 2?
Absolutely. So the reductions in height were ultimately based on an expected 4-to-4 height of 12 feet rather than 14 feet that was proposed by the petitioner. The petitioner did kind of explain to us, you know, the requirements of a modern office building, that there be this allowance for adequate mechanicals for proper ventilation and things of that nature. So there was a rationale for it. Nonetheless, that was the recommendation that came forward between Development Services and Historic.
And how much did the variance buildings be considered monumental component? How much did that weigh into your recommendation?
Just considering that the way that this originated, that honestly was the way through, it was the perspective through which we viewed this project. Because this was kind of the confluence of a number of factors, not only obviously a private interest, but also the government's significant input mm-hmm. into this, and those other factors that were there. There are a number of things that had to come together for this to kind of make sense. And so the monumentality of the first building in particular, I'd say was significant.
In determining your position, in determining your recommendation.
Absolutely. Okay. Were this a purely private project, I'm not confident this would have the same outcome.
All right. Are we ready for the vote? Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
No.
Ms. Wilson?
No.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
No.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Y. Woody?
Yes.
I say no as well. Motion carries.
Sorry, we have one more item.
We do have one more item. I'm sorry.
That's all. Thank you.
A brief discussion on Godly Station.
You don't want the full version today?
I got to be somewhere at 5 o'clock.
I'll give people a second to clear.
Actually, you can make it as long as you like.
I don't want to see anybody get up and walk out in the middle of the presentation. I promise there's benefit to the discussion. So. Okay. I'll continue if that's okay with everyone. So this is an item that was originally on the regular agenda, and this was asked to be removed from the final agenda by the petitioner. And staff, obviously, you guys will recall, for those of you that were at the pre-meeting before the last meeting, I went into kind of a bit of a discussion about PUDs and the fact that we have somewhat of a PUD problem, right? So we have PUDs at various stages. We have juvenile PUDs. We have adolescent PUDs. We have geriatric PUDs. And this is one of the geriatric PUDs, unfortunately. And it is at a stage where there is, significant development, but there are still portions that need to be developed. And unfortunately, we have just seen so many different versions of kind of these master plans that have been modified and changed and pulled out. So the idea, if you recall from previous discussion, it comes in as a whole in the very beginning. And then ultimately it kind of gets cut up into these final master plans that represent sub areas of the larger group. And so what you are looking at is the actual request that you will hear likely at the next MPC meeting. And it's a request to put apartments here, right? You guys saw this most recently, if you will recall.
Benton Boulevard, huh?
Yep. So this is Benton Boulevard, Highlands. This is a little bit north of the Alpha and C-17 petition that came through here very recently. But of course, that was pulled out and that went on to city council and it was voted on essentially as a rezoning. We don't really have heartburn there. The document that we've been calling for in the last couple of meetings ultimately should encapsulate what happened on Alpha and C-17. This is one where most recently you all were asked to deal with the application of BC standards to these commercial zone properties out here for the purpose of the developer picking up a little bit more land, because obviously when these standards were conceived, the cost of building, a lot of things were really, really different, right? So anyway, I'm going to jump over just to give you an impression. And I will say, unfortunately, this was a bit of a tense conversation, but anything that is a modification of the Godley Station PUD these days, in all honesty, is somewhat of a tense conversation, just because, and I guess just to use the language that I shared with the petitioner, staff has lost confidence in this document to continue to coherently guide development in this area. And so we knew that at some point it was going to come down to sort of a tough situation of figuring out who is responsible, who's supposed to do what. So if you recall, there's a declarant, that person comes forward. In this case, there's no longer that same original declarant relationship. There are questions as to who the actual declarant is, when the ability to make a change to the master plan is appropriate and when it's not. And so there's one layer of this that we deal with where obviously we still work through the city and the things that the zoning administrator deems as valid. We typically give a nod and say, hey, that's fine. But obviously, as it comes to this board, I would say it's a privilege to develop in a PUD because you go in one time and there are sort of these tacit understandings. They're not even so much tacit. When they go in and they make actual infrastructure investment, they know how many toilets are going to flush. They know what the capacity of the roads needs to be. These are things that are known. And so once you get away from that original approval and you start making, you know, tons of new changes over the course of 30 years, that original document and all of the assumptions that came with it are no longer valid. That's the place that we're at, and that is why staff is asking for something a little bit different but very necessary at this juncture. And so what you're seeing, thank you, Subhashi, for your diligence in pulling together what I'll call an audit of all of our records with regard to Godley Station, and it's ongoing, right? But you can see the Godley Station master plan is in its third iteration. These are tick marks, in essence. So this one's on number 3, North Godley, third. Highlands, third. South Godley is on its first. The Mulberry, which you guys saw recently, is on its second. And Alpha C-17, that was the first iteration that you all saw before. So it's somewhat unwieldy. I'm just going to run through these quickly, not to belabor the point. I think you all get it. But I did not want the petitioner to think that this was just staff giving them a hard time. I wanted them to understand that when staff comes to you all, it's for the purpose of saying, we have researched this. We have confidence in the things that we say to you to make sure that you make decisions that are consistent with our ordinances, with our policies, with state law, with federal law, things of that nature. It's our job to help us remain in compliance. And so this particular PUD is at a point where there's just been so much change and a lack of reconciliation as it has been modified to ensure that any of the final master plans we're editing, we can't always be confident that they're reconciled to the original master plan. So we know that this is going to take the work of, at the very least, Thomas and Hutton and Coleman. Those are the two companies that have done the vast majority of the work out here. I will, without even looking at it, put it at a strong 70%. If I were to go and pull the site plans and the work that's been done, my hunch says it's probably more than that. Mm-hmm. But just, I'll go ahead and say maybe 70%. And so these are just the iterations that we've seen of the Godley master plan. And then to look at the one that you are specifically requested now to consider, these are three different iterations. Actually, I'm going to pull that over just so you can see. Three different iterations of the Highlands Park business plan. None of them here had that pink. I'm not going to say that there hasn't been residential there before. But the question being, when we add residential in particular, what is the impact to the original approval of the number of acres that were supposed to be designated for residential, many of which were single family homes? I'll go back to an earlier example that I think you all remember when Neil McKenzie from Coleman was here earlier in the year, and we were talking about a credit of density. You guys remember us talking about credit? They had credit left in the veins, that kind of thing, right? So this is that reconciliation that we need to be able to say, okay, well, these single family dwellings that were supposed to be there, are no longer there. They became industrial. What's the impact to the other acreage that was designated for that purpose? Not only that, the place that you want to put them now is not the place they were originally designated to go. So it's not like we kind of shake it up and those parts go anywhere they want. They were supposed to be within a certain identified geographic area, right? So what's happening today is I would like to, first, I've shown you this. I would like to, allow the petitioner the opportunity to come forward and to explain, hey, this is what I'm attempting to do. And I would like you all to have some discourse with them about your understandings and your expectation about the confidence that we should have when you are asked to make a decision at this level rather than saying, okay, you should just go to city council and treat this as a rezoning, simply because we're not confident that we're overstepping the original approval and authority that we were given when city council stepped up and said, sure, you can develop within the context of this PUD. So I know the petitioner is here. John, I'm going to put you on this. John Giordano. John left. Okay, so here's our property owner. Actually, it's the property owner. I will let him come forward. It'll be a slightly different conversation, but nonetheless, this is something that has been attached as a condition to two prior petitions. This third request is now coming forward. It is time that we, get some weight behind the request that we revise these documents so that we can have confidence when we're making decisions at this level, that they are consistent with what city council or county commission, whatever the case may be, that we're doing things that are in accordance. And I will put his petition back on the. Now I got all this. Where did I put it? Don't want that. Oh, there it is. Perfect. Okay.
Hi, Gary Wiggins. I'm owner of this project. I took this project over in 2014 and originally, it was all like a office industrial flex project that obviously never got any traction. So when I took it over, I thought, well, the residents out there were for sure needing more services. There were no services out there for them. And so I actually did a town hall meeting in early 2014, and they said, you know, we need retail, we need research, we need services. So that was the idea of coming up with the first petition that I did. But the biggest problem with the retail is that you need X number of rooftops. And I got the initial master plan changed with multifamily, and then the retail, the service level retail, and I've been marketing it since 2014. I just can't get it off the ground. We need more rooftops out there. And we have a shovel ready project, completely permitted, ready to break ground, 22,000 square feet. I can't get it off the ground. And so this is an opportunity to add some more units there. Now, originally, if you look at the original master plan that was approved for all of North Godley, this was all multifamily that got changed back with the original developer back in 1999. So it was 100% multifamily in the original PUD. It got changed to this office industrial. And then I've come back in. And again, I'm trying to do the best I can for the residents out there. And this is just another step for me to get there. Now, where it was all originally multifamily, and I'm trying to convert a little bit of it back to multifamily, I don't see where this is something that takes some major approval. It doesn't make any sense to me. We went through the accounting. Edward wanted the accounting on multifamily that's been built versus approved. And even after this approval, there's still 100 acres left to be built versus the original approval of the original PUD back in 98. So again, I think as far as the accounting goes for what this project has done, we're still under the cap.
How many are set aside for multifamily that haven't been built?
Well, I don't, This project, this whole PUD is probably 95% built out. I mean, there's no land left out there. It's
your land.
Well, I don't have any land left either besides that service level retail. That's all I have left after this. Just those front lots. The rest of it's gone. So again, I just felt like this wasn't that big of a ask, and it just seems to be, it seems to be coming out of left field a little bit that, it seems to be just becoming a bigger process than I feel is needed.
Well, one of the reasons it's become a big process is because we keep hearing from people who live in that area saying Benton Boulevard is just a nightmare to drive on. And adding more multifamily is going to.
I think there's a reduction in trips overall from retail commercial to multifamily. Yeah, I think if you do a traffic analysis, that turns out to be true.
But at peak hours, still the multifamily is the one that would hit them.
I have just a question because this is something that keeps kind of being said. Is there a resolution with who the declarant actually is?
So this came up in 2014, and Brooke Stillwell, you know, city attorney, ruled that there really is no declarant. I'm basically the declarant of this master plan, and I've been acting that way since 2014. I already have a letter in debates, and I think that will be easily resolved.
The main concern is specifically because the letter was sent by somebody else saying that they're the legitimate declarant, right? So for me, in my mind, before we place a vote on something, we want to make sure that we're giving an answer to the person who has the right to ask the question.
Yeah, well, I'm not asking for a vote today, but I think by the time I come before the commission, I think we'll have an answer there. I'm pretty confident with that. Any other questions?
Have you addressed the issue of traffic? It's still, like Ms. Jarrett said, we still get a lot of complaints about traffic situation out there on the Highlands and Benton.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can demonstrate the difference between service level retail and multifamily. We can show the difference between the two, and it's going to be a reduction. This conversion.
But it won't be a peak hour reduction. During the peak hour, it's going to be higher. When the multifamily folks are coming and going from work,
I think a majority of the folks out there work, and probably you're looking at when people are going to the stores for services, probably about the same time when they're coming home from work or, you know, going to work in the morning. I think, you know, it's almost all the homes out there are, you know, they're two family work, you know, both mom and dad go to work every day. So I think you're not going to have a drastic change. I think it is going to be a reduction, but we can show that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for staff?
I just want to make a comment because we face this frequently whenever we have large tracts of land and we're talking about traffic counts and traffic issues. It is a difficult situation to be in to ask a developer, well, what about the roads? Because often they have no control over that. That is at the state level. And, you know, as we've experienced at Savannah Chatham Day, there's a lot of conversation at the state level and from the Georgia Department of Transportation of investing in fixing the roads in our area. Unfortunately, if you've ever been a product of the school system in Georgia, you build for what you have. That's what the state funds. They fund for what you have, not for what's coming. So unfortunately, the roads don't typically get addressed until the developments are built. And at that point, of course, everyone's pulling their hair out. I have to drive on Benton Highlands to Benton just to get to my mom because that's still better than going Pooler Parkway at peak hour. It's awful. It takes probably five rotations to get through that light, but it's Every time we come up with this, I don't normally feel for developers, mm-hmm. but I feel for the developers in that they're posed this question that is an impossible thing to answer because they can't say, well, we're going to go ahead and put an extra two lanes in. They're not in a position to do that.
Well, unfortunately, the problem, in my opinion, is that the developers don't design the initial subdivision, the initial development. The initial master plan for the traffic that they need to design for.
But when you have large tracks like this that are connecting to major thoroughfares, which Benton is a major thoroughfare and so is Highlands, but it's, you know, what is the answer there? It's, in our area, we're developing so quickly with so much residential and retail commercial development that the state has to catch up and they have to add lanes and they have to do public transportation. It's all part of a grander scheme that one developer can't give an answer to. And I think that, you know, that one of the parts of it is asking them to contribute to the funding for improving roads, but asking them to design it, that's not in their purview.
But when a person brings a PUD forward, it is within the purview.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Mr. Welch, did you have something you wanted to add?
For staff, I mean, first of all, I can appreciate the developer coming here, not asking for a vote, just laying it out. This is different, and I can really appreciate that to open our minds to what he's going through. But I know we're not doing traffic study, but I would have being in the retail business at good God, I'm there at 8:30 to 8:30, but I would have to believe that, you know, having retail here does create more traffic.
It
rather
does,
than, and the people who are there, you know, families are in their doors eating dinner at 6 at night, 7 at night, what have you. These shops are still open, most of them. You have continued traffic for retail versus having, you know, a subdivision added on here. In my experience, all of y'all, you're going to have more traffic throughout the whole day with retail here versus having the homes built.
But if you talk to those people who have to come and go on Ogeechee every day to get to and from their homes, it's the peak hour traffic that causes the problem.
Right.
They wait forever during the peak hours.
I don't disagree with that. I think the whole area, Godley, was probably should have been redesigned a whole lot differently, but that's neither here nor there. That's yesteryears.
I think
the developer for coming here today, like asking us to open our minds. Thank you.
And also I'd like to, say something about the retail versus multifamily and something that with this Godley station that we just voted on not too long ago, changing some commercial retail space to warehouse space, you know, having these people back there in Godley station, having grocery stores and retail space that they can use within their community does keep them off of Pooler Parkway and off of Highlands. And because they have to leave that community and come out, you know, to go and get a sandwich, you know? So, I mean, I was a little disappointed to see that, you know, cause how many of these people in the community are going to go to a rug warehouse? Not a whole lot, but I mean, they might go to a grocery store and stay off of Highland and Benton.
I know. If I may, one of the reasons that we brought this to you is because we keep getting more and more updates for PUDs, and we just wanted to let you know what some of the challenges are. Especially like this one that was approved over 25 years ago. So things change. We don't know exactly what the conditions were when, you know, in this case, the county saw this. You had different land use, you had different uses, a whole bunch of stuff. So when you end up starting to piecemeal, which is what you end up coming back with, you don't have the same requirements with regards to the traffic studies and some other things based on some of those changes of use. Even if it's under a cap, it's still a change and it still has an impact. And one of the things that we've been talking about is trying to figure out how do we get one plan, because that's what we're wanting, one document that shows all of the changes on one document so that everybody knows what they're looking at based on what has happened to the property.
Aside from that, we've got
multiple little pieces, and it's not just for this one, it's for all of them. And if we, you know, it could be something that we can talk about a little bit more later, but you know, I think that when you've got a master plan or a PUD that's more than, you know, 10 years old or 15 years old, especially 15 years old for sure, if it's not built out, there needs to be a review of any of the changes so that all of the updates are on one plan.
So Sebastian doesn't have to work.
So that we don't have to have, you know, staff. I mean, staff spent time pulling together all of these different little documents. So it's like being pecked to death by a duck. So that's all we're asking is let's have some way to at least have all of the changes all on one document so that when they're coming in to make the request, we're not saying that they shouldn't, you know what you're dealing with, because this is not what was approved when it was initially approved. It was in, I think pretty sure this was in the county. It's now in the city. You have a lot of different dynamics that's taken place since this was done 25 years ago. So that's kind of why we're here, and one of the things that we're wanting to encourage and, you know, stress upon the master developer to do when they come in with some of these changes.
Yeah, aside from even the big – this is a big meeting where we're talking about a potential change. You still have site plans that are coming in for some of these places. There have been debates, and I use capital D, debates, over which standards apply. Developers will attempt to choose the standards that are most advantageous for them that may not necessarily apply. And so, you know, we spend time going back and forth with city staff or whoever to try and figure out even which standards apply within different versions. And, oh, no, I have a version that says I can do X, Y, Z, blah, 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 blah. Or I brought this to MPC and they said this applies and we're going to blend because we have an old version and a new version. And I only wanted this to apply to that. And I'm going to take this other thing. So at this point, even for the sake of understanding whether or not MPC is within its original, you know, bounds to approve, just so that we have one document gavel that says these are the standards that apply. So when you attend it, the lifespan of most of this real estate is not more than 30 years, 40, you know what I'm saying? Soon we're going to start to see redevelopment in some of these places. And so people are going to reconceptualize, and we need to know what standards apply, or how are they going to, at least how are we going to change them to accommodate whatever is coming next? You know, what's our baseline? So awesome. Thank you all so much for the discussion. This was helpful.
Thank you. Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn, Coles.
All in favor? All right. See y'all next time. No, I won't see you next time. You got the helm next time.
So I'll see you later.
Yes, in a week.